Thanks for listening to this podcast of APA Compass, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio show. APA Compass airs at 9 a.m. on the first Friday of each month on Portland's KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and at kboo.fm. Our archives are downloadable on our website at kboo.fm/APA Compass. Join our Facebook page, APA Compass Radio, or follow us on Twitter. You can email us at apacompass@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm Sarika Mehta. Today, I'm speaking with University of Pittsburgh scholar Anupama Jain. She's the author of the book, How to Be South Asian in America, Narratives of Ambivalence and Belonging. Anupama Jain has taught at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, Union College, and Colby College. Her main academic interests are Anglophone and American narrative, postcolonial theory, utopianism, and social justice. She joins us today by phone. Welcome to the show, Anu.
Thank you. I'm glad to be speaking to you.
Sure. Talking about the book, it's called Narratives of Ambivalence and Belonging. What do you consider the American dream, and how does this relate with the South Asian diaspora?
Years ago, I taught an American literature class, and I decided to offer some kind of focal point to teach novels and stories related to the American dream. And the class was really surprising because I discovered that although the students were very comfortable with using the phrase, when we tried to define it, none of us really could. So the first part of the book is really my trying to sketch out, well, what exactly do different people mean when they describe the American dream? Where did this language come from? And I think for South Asians, the American dream, it's unique because of when South Asians as a large group started immigrating to the United States after immigration reform in the 1960s. And so prior to that, the quotas kept South Asians from developing in great numbers in the U.S. And I think that they're unique, they're different even among Asians because of the fact that many of them in post-1965, because of their professional skills and so their educational attainment and socioeconomic status was higher than average. But I think that they were still attracted by this notion of opportunity and the idea of something better. I think that that's what the American dream, as vague as that is, I think that's what different versions of the American dream represent to different groups. And for South Asians, certainly economic opportunity, professional opportunity, and the idea that one could, as compared to old world settings, reinvent identity and life by coming to America.
I think that relates to a lot of the same things that we've heard from immigrant communities over the years. Half of the title of your book is called Narratives of Ambivalence and Belonging. Why did you choose that kind of a title? What does that mean?
The ambivalence and belonging phrase is, on the one hand, I try in the book to point out how a lot of our stories about belonging, who am I, who's my community, and that what I felt became clearer and clearer to me is that there really isn't, for South Asian Americans, there are very few seamless stories or experiences of belonging. They're not quite American according to historical definitions of race and assumptions about Americanness. If you're of the second generation, the American-born confused Desi, you're not really Indian either. And so at the same time that there was this incredible desire to belong being expressed in all these different kinds of stories about the American dream, there was also a kind of resistance, and there were lots of mixed feelings about what expectations came with being allowed to belong. And I talk about that in terms especially of authenticity, that authenticity or, you know, and as I said, I think the second generation deals with the, are you really Indian? Do you know your culture? And perhaps first generation immigrants are dealing more with the question of, are you really American? But in any case, what might seem like a simple question of belonging is so politically weighted with notions of loyalty, even patriotism. You know, who gets to decide what is really Indian or American or these other categories?
Related to this topic, discussing kind of this identity, this complex identity with South Asian Americans, in the past 10, 15 years, we've seen a wealth of independent films dedicated to observing and dissecting the so-called confused identity of the South Asian American, especially the name American-born confused Desi, ABCD. What is your perspective on these kind of films, and what do you predict for the future of these films and literature?
I guess I have a range of responses. The first one, I think, is that growing up, popular culture really didn't represent what was my daily reality in an immigrant family, a family whose social life was very much immersed in a South Asian American community. So I think that when I started to see these films, I felt that sense of representation of a unique sort of set of historical contingencies was really refreshing. The future of popular culture, I think South Asians are in some fairly, you know, recognizable roles. I teach an Asian American literature class and have them do pop culture projects, and they, you know, the character on The Office really intrigues a lot of students. And then there was that brief, and anyway, so I think that we are moving away from what was a complete lack of a South Asian presence in film and TV. Something America, you know, has struggled with, and I think the movie was called The Hollywood Shuffle, Richard Pryor, years and years ago, and it was sort of a spoof on how African-American characters were just such limited roles. And so I think that South Asians are perhaps in a moment where the representation doesn't just happen in these independent productions, and may happen more broadly and more may reveal a greater diversity of types, or not types, but of, you know, perhaps rich characters. However, at the same time that I say that, I know from filmmakers who have made films about South Asian Americans, part of the reason why they get independently produced and distributed is that big companies think that it's just a niche audience. And partly my book is pointing out that that's just not the case. That, as you said about this very familiar immigrant narrative of the American dream, South Asians are continuing to evoke it, but because of globalization, because of their particular position as post-colonial elites in some cases, but because of the relationships of different regions and the kind of discourses that people use to talk about identity today, their version of the American dream isn't identical. And there's something really interesting to look at there about how people are engaging with the same processes of assimilation that every immigrant group has had to confront, but that they're doing it in interesting and revealing ways. So I don't think their stories are actually of limited sort of appeal. I don't know how much you engage with Hollywood. I do sort of sporadically, but my parents live in a part of New Jersey which has a very thriving and perhaps at this point the most active Indian business community in Islam, New Jersey. And if the posters, the Bollywood posters on the various stores, that the women are lighter and lighter skinned, it seems to me, and they're thinner and thinner. And so this sort of global idea of what ideal female beauty is seems to be tending more in that direction rather than a more diverse understanding of all of these measures of attractiveness.
Definitely. It's definitely been a very noticeable change over at least a generation, I think, slowly and subtly.
Yes.
So
I think that's true.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
And maybe there is some history now that's been produced. I've often wondered about skin color preference. So as far as I know, it exists in all of these different places. In different South American countries, they have different names and different hierarchies. In India, dark skin is less preferable to fairness, right? And I know that in African-American communities that there are values attached to skin color. And I don't know if all of these are related systems, you know, assessing worth and attractiveness. But in the chapter about South Asians, certainly in terms of marriage possibilities, the skin color of both male and female participants really matters. But I think that there is such a high value placed on women's fairness. I think that there are probably still implicit class judgments made about a woman's, you know, ability, quote unquote, to be light-skinned, and white is better. So that the sort of intersection of that South Asian history with being a brown person in the United States, that it links in with the other kinds of ambivalence that one might have. I was having lunch with a few people today, but somebody said, so if you could be any ethnicity besides the one you are, what would you be? I've never even conceived of this exercise or why I would engage in it. And they happen to be Anglo-American, so perhaps that's part of it. But I said, well, you know, if you'd asked me as a kid growing up in New Jersey where there was a lot of racism in my high school, I would have said white. It's easier. It seems like, you know, you've got more privileges. Even as a 13-year-old, I was quite conscious of that. So I think that the novels point out how assimilation in the American dream, although it's not explicitly stated anywhere, there's a sense, as Audre Lorde put it, that there's this sort of mythical norm, right? And it's not the brown female body. It's not the dark South Asian woman. And so I think that you see patriarchy and racial ideology sort of reinforcing the lack of it, a sense that one doesn't belong and perhaps one will never belong.
As we're wrapping up this discussion on South Asian Americanization and how complex these issues are,
right?
What would you like our listeners to really get out of this discussion and out of your book?
It's something that I think is central to my teaching, and I've taught a lot of different subjects in literary studies or themes, and I teach both Asian American literature and Anglophone post-colonial literature. And I think what's common to everything I teach and to the book and what I want to keep working on is actually how often we simplistically read things that are actually very complicated, that I think from the outside, or even just a term like ABCD, which I grew up with. And I knew that part of me always resented it, but the ability to articulate why required me understanding all of these layered histories and this complexity. And it makes me feel like I feel much more capable of understanding my own experience because I have a sense of that history. So that's, I think, what I would like people to take from the book about ways of looking at, especially other realities, other worldviews, and seeing them in their complexity rather than reducing them to, an acronym, for example.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me. I really enjoyed it.
I've been speaking with Anupama Jain, author of How to Be South Asian in America, Narratives of Ambivalence and Belonging. I'm Sarika Mehta, and you're listening to APA Compass on KBOO.
I'm a scientist of sound, mathematically putting it down, and probably all standing on the verge of getting it on. You're in Vancouver by the sea to review the Wankers' latest album for the first time on live, that is, very live radio. A review of an album while it's actually spinning on your very